That this is a great honor for me just to talk to you, and as a, because you're a comedian and work in animation, which is two things which I love.
Well, that's very nice. Thanks.
So one question I want to ask you was, how did you start out in comedy and everything?
The answer to that would be Second City. Well, maybe earlier. I went to McMaster University in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, and Marty Short and Eugene Levy were at the, actually so was Ivan Reitman, were at the same school, and we didn't have a film department or a theater department. There were no sort of like arts credits in either theater or media. It was we were all enrolled in just straight. I was doing a honors bachelor's degree in English Lit. Marty was in social work. Eugene was in social work, I think. I don't even know what Ivan was doing. But there was a student union that sort of funded, through student union dues, extracurricular stuff. So you could get money to put on plays, and you could get money to make a film. You'd get money to run a... They had a student newspaper and a radio station. So there were things that you could do, but they were non-credit. They were like extracurricular. So all of us involved ourselves heavily in that because we really didn't give a flying crap about the regular academic stuff. And when I graduated, I really didn't know what to do, and I got a scholarship to do a master's degree in English Lit. So I just stayed in school, and Marty and Eugene got into the cast of Godspell,
mm-hmm.
which was in Toronto. And about 9 months into the run, the cast changed. Some people left. And Marty and Gene said, you should come here and you could get into this show. You just have to audition. I'm sure you'd get in. So I went and auditioned, and I didn't get in. So I stopped working on my master's degree, and I did that. I was in Godspell, and then I did a couple of commercials, and then I couldn't really get any work, so then I went into advertising. I didn't want to be a waiter who called himself an actor.
Mm-hmm.
That just pissed me off. It was like, it seemed really stupid. If you're an actor, you should get work. If you're not, then you're a waiter. So,
yeah.
So I just wrote up a bunch of fake ads and put a little package together and went through the Yellow Pages phone book calling ad agencies. And by the time I got to the M's, at McCann Erickson, I got hired.
Okay.
So I worked there for a year and a half, 2 years, because I couldn't really get a job in showbiz. And
and you worked for Coca-Cola?
Yeah, I actually became the head writer of Coca-Cola Canada.
Oh.
And then I worked in New York with Bill Backer at McCann Erickson, who was the guy that created the slogans, "Things go better with Coke," and "It's the real thing, Coke." So he was like a famous creative director, very wealthy. But then they opened a Second City in Toronto, and I saw it. And it was like Dan Aykroyd and John Candy and Valerie Bromfield and Joe Flaherty. And it was just like, oh, God, that's what I really want to do. So I quit my job. I auditioned for Second City and got in. And I quit my job in advertising. I went from like, I don't know, $100,000 a week, a year, down to like $145 a week to work in Second City. And it was the best thing I ever did. I mean, that was like such a fantastic experience. Doing that stage show every night was really, it was just the best.
Did you ever picture yourself when you were younger, like when you were little, thinking, maybe I want to do something like that of acting or making people laugh?
It's funny you should say that, because I did, but not in a way that I thought was even remotely reasonable. I used to tape Bob Hope's monologues when I was a kid, because I really liked his style, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Bob Hope was like he was a vaudeville star,
mm-hmm.
then he was a Broadway star, then he was a movie star. Then he was a radio star. Then he was a TV star. I mean, you know, the guy did everything. And I really respected that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I liked his monologues. He had a style, you know, in his monologues. And I never thought of impersonating or anything at that time. I just was like into it, and I would tape it and listen to them. And I thought one day, man, it'd be really great to work with Bob Hope. But I was living in Dundas, Ontario, Canada. Bob Hope might as well have been on Mars.
Yeah.
With respect to my ability to realize that dream. So I didn't really think of it as a real dream. I just thought of it as a pipe dream. And that's one of the weird things about entertainment, because I ended up being on Bob Hope shows with Bob Hope. I ended up going to his house and talking to him, and I ended up playing golf with him. I ended up spending a lot of time with the guy. You know, I used to watch the Johnny Carson show, The Tonight Show, starring Johnny Carson.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, when I was a kid, Johnny Carson would make or break somebody's career. I mean, if you did well on Tonight Show, you became a star.
Yeah.
He started so many people. And I dreamed of, oh, man, that would be so cool to be on The Tonight Show. And then I was on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson.
Wow.
And I made Johnny Carson laugh. I sat between Johnny and Buddy Hackett.
Oh, my God.
And it was like I had both of them laughing. I was so pleased. It was like this really is a dream come true. And then after Johnny retired, I became friends on another show I was working with one of his writers, a guy named Bob Smith. And Johnny's nephew, Jeff Soltzvang or something. I can't pronounce it properly. But anyway, he was a friend of Bob's, and he called Bob. And, no, I know what it was. Jeff came over to visit Bob on our lot. And so the three of us are joking around, and Johnny Carson called his nephew while we were joking around. He said, "What are you doing?" And I'm here with Bob Smith and Dave Thomas just joking around. Johnny says, Well, I want to be there joking around. He said, what are you guys doing? You want to come over for lunch? I'll buy you lunch. So we went over and had lunch with Johnny Carson. And then it's like, you know, I got Johnny Carson laughing, and we had shared jokes about The Tonight Show, like behind-the-scenes things that I always wondered about. And then I had lunch with him a couple of times after that. It was like when I was a little kid, all these things were like really remote, crazy pipe dreams.
Yeah.
And then when they actually happen, then it's kind of crazy. And then they tell you their stories about how they realize their dreams. And it's really kind of funny, you know, because that sort of puts it in kind of a perspective where it's like, oh, I see. John Cleese from Monty Python. Mm-hmm. It was one of my absolute favorites, you know. And then cut 2 years later, I'm doing the movie Rat Race with John Cleese. And I had a great time. Like, John and I ended up hanging around, and we we were flying from Calgary back to LA, and we'd done some shooting there. We shot that movie in Calgary, a place called Ely, Nevada. We shot in Las Vegas and also LA. And so we're flying from Calgary to LA, and we get to the airport. We took the same car there, and this woman from Air Canada meets us, and she's like part of their concierge service that helps incompetent actors find their airplanes. And she says, is there anything I can get you? It's like 7 in the morning. She says, is there anything I can get you? And John looks at her and he goes, yes, I'd like to have a proper English breakfast before I fly. And she's like, excuse me? He says, well, you know, a proper English breakfast. Toast, eggs, tea, marmalade, the whole thing. A proper English. You do know what a proper English breakfast is, don't you? She said, oh, yes, but, like, there's really, like, it's early. There's really nothing open to me except maybe Jack in the Box, you know. And John says, do you mean to tell me in a city of this size, 865,000 people, Calgary, Alberta, that I can't get a proper English breakfast before I fly? That's just not acceptable. So she races off to find him a proper English breakfast.
Oh, my gosh.
And I turned to John. I said, John, what the hell did you do that for? He said, I don't know. She seemed like she wanted to have something to do. So, I mean, I laughed my head off. The guy, he was like, he would do these, like, mischievous pranks on people that were, like, in awe of him. And if they said something stupid, he would just be all over them. And he was just he couldn't stop himself, you know. He was a tormentor. And I don't know, it's just like when I look at my career and I look at, you know, how I ended up doing stuff with Bob Hope and Johnny Carson, Jonathan Winters and John Cleese, it's like, well, hell, I did all the things I ever really wanted to do. It's like crazy, you know?
Yeah. Hopefully one day I'll have stories to tell about people that I meet and everything, you know.
I'm sure you will. You know, you just have to be really determined to go after it, you know? When I did a show called The New Show with Lorne Michaels, which probably had one of the best writing staffs of any show that I've ever been on. And
Buck Henry was part of that show.
He was, yeah. And,
I think
Al Franken and Tom Davis and Jack Handy, who wrote Deep Thoughts. George Myers, who became one of the sort of geniuses behind The Simpsons. Steve Martin wrote on that show, and he's an excellent writer. Tom Gamble and Max Pross, who went on to Seinfeld and The Simpsons, and Gary Shandling. The guys on that show were unbelievable. It was the best writing team that I think that I ever worked with. And I had an argument with Peter Chernin years ago, who's now the chairman of Fox. I had an argument with him about audiences, TV audience, because he said he believed that you should shoot TV comedy in front of an audience because that gives the – he said that makes the comedy more honest. And I burst out laughing. I said – and he said, what's so funny? I said, that's completely wrong. He said, what? Even back then, he didn't like being told he was wrong. But I said, no. I said – the audience in a TV show is whipped into a frenzy prior to the cast coming out and performing the show. They're warmed up by a comedian. They're told that they're part of the experience and that they're supposed to laugh and that their laughter is going to make the show a success. I said, that is the fakest and most insincere comedy audience that you could ever put together. And I said, and I've performed in front of TV sitcom audiences and they laugh at that just isn't funny.
Yeah.
And I know that. Because I know what's funny, and I'll hear them laugh. And my wife used to tease me because I did this sitcom called Grace Under Fire.
Yeah.
And when I would do a line that got a laugh that I didn't think deserved a laugh, sometimes you could see me, like, stiffen angrily on camera. You know, I was so mad that they were laughing at something that wasn't funny and that I was there doing it that, I didn't like doing sitcoms. And I didn't like, I tried to quit every year. I tried to get out of my contract every year. And I just didn't like doing them. The money's great, but the work is crap. And film is good because you can craft something in film.
I agree.
Stage is good because it's this honest, very sort of mercurial experience where it's gone. The minute you perform it, it's gone and it never comes back. I prefer SCTV to SNL because SNL is sort of a stage version of TV, and I don't like that because I think that's neither fish nor fowl. It's sort of halfway in between, and if you're going to do it with an audience, then throw the cameras away and do a stage show. And if you're going to do it without an audience, then you can create a different art form, you know, with the filming process.
One last question I want to ask is, do you have any advice that you would give to someone who is interested in maybe one day getting out in entertainment of comedy, of writing or directing or even, you know, the steps that you have, you know, have come to? Do you have any advice for someone else?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
It goes like this. And the reason I have this at my fingertips is because so many people ask me this. A lot of people make it in show business because they're handsome, unbelievably good-looking, beautiful. A lot of people in show business make it because they're really talented. They're not handsome or beautiful, but a really good actor or a really, really gifted writer. And some people make it because they're lucky. But nobody makes it with either of those ingredients unless they're unbelievably driven. That is the common denominator that unites everybody who is successful in show business. It isn't how did they make it, it's what could have stopped them from making it. They are so driven, so dedicated, think eat, sleep, breathe, one dream and one dream only, and that is to do that, to do that business, to do that work. And that's the way to do it. It's the only way.
Wow.
So if you have unbelievable drive, if you're unbelievably dedicated, if you have are absolutely singular in your vision to pursue this, you'll make it. Believe me, a lot of people with zero talent make it, who are just absolutely 100% dedicated. And they pick up stuff along the way. So they're not completely incompetent, but, you know. And then there are people that are absolutely brilliant that don't make it because they don't have any drive. They just don't make it. They're very talented. They're great writers, but they don't have any drive. They don't have that drive, that vision that they're going to do this. They don't do it. And therefore they don't make it. And there are lots of people that are really good looking that live in Omaha and Schenectady who never make it. And they don't make it because they're not driven. So that's it. That's the ingredient. And that's how you're going to make it. That's the only way.
That's
my opinion.
Well, that's really good advice. All this week I've been telling people, like, I'm going to get an interview with Dave Thomas. They're like, Dave Thomas? Like, yeah, you know. He was
who the hell's that?
I was like, he was on SCTV. And so they were trying to say, well, what movies was he in? I'm like, he was in Rat Race. He was a lawyer in Rat Race. It's like, oh, that guy. He's funny. But
well,
I mean,
that's the thing. People, let me wrap this up with one story.
Okay.
You are going to have a shorter career than Bob Hope because things change.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole landscape in the business has changed. Paul Schaefer's a good friend of mine, and he had Britney Spears on Late Night with David Letterman. And Britney Spears will drop by and just say, hey, I want to do the show. She's not booked. She'll just drop by and say, I want to do the show. And because David likes her and because she's so absolutely hot in terms of the business and whatever she's doing, then everybody wants to see it. He will bump a guest and let her come on the show. So Paul played Thanks for the Memories when she came on, which was Bob Hope's theme song. And his reason was that Bob Hope used to do exactly the same thing on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. He would drop by and Johnny would bump a guest for Bob Hope, and Bob would be plugging a special or something. Brittany comes up to Paul after the show and says, what was that music you played when I came on? And Paul said, that was Thanks for the Memories. That was, you know, you come by, you drop by the show and David will bump a guest and you can come on. And Bob Hope used to do that on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. That's why I played that. And she looks at him and she says, who's Bob Hope?
No, she did not.
Yes, she did.
Oh, my God.
And that's the way it's going. It's going like that. You have a very short turnaround in this business now before people don't know who you are.
Let me tell you something. I know who Dave Thomas is, and you are a wonderful comedian and a wonderful writer, and like I've told everyone so far, Dave Thomas is one of my heroes.
Well, thank you. That's very kind.
And I was going to do anything to get this interview with you, to talk to you and just, you know, hear what you have to say and ask you questions, because, like I said, you are one of my biggest heroes.
Well, it was good to talk to you, man.